on to our first speaker now, Jed Kani, the president of the ACPU. Thank you, Jed.
Good evening, everybody. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we meet tonight and pay my respects to elders past and present. And you heard from Lucy that we have recently concluded our triennial congress. And at Congress, I'm very pleased to say that we put forward a draft policy on asylum seekers, and the process at Congress was that it would be debated and amended. You know how these things go. Everyone scurries away and discusses bits and pieces of the policy. And what we came out with at the other end, much to my pleasure, was a much stronger and determined policy. It was not watered down at all. In fact, it was strengthened. And I'm very proud of our Congress that we did that. And I thought tonight it might be constructive for me to just take you through a little bit of it. Damien tells me that he has all the answers to our questions tonight, so I'm going to give the answers up to Damien. and then he really assists from the rest of our panel. So I'll take us through the Congress policy and a little bit about what I think the union movement needs to do next, and then we'll So I was very pleased that we took a rights-based approach to debating the policy at Congress. And it was acknowledged by the policy things that, to you this is, not rocket science, but for us to get this together at Congress I think was quite exciting. So the policy recognises that refugees and asylum seekers are, of course, the world's most vulnerable people, or some of them. And it very firmly states that seeking asylum is a fundamental human right. It states that policies towards asylum seekers and refugees should reflect a compassionate and multicultural nation. It recognises that we're a signatory to the 1951 United Nations Refugee Convention, which makes it clear that any genuine claims of persecution must be considered and assessed. As unionists, we can and should play a role in changing community attitudes towards refugees. And I'll come back to that a bit later. With regards to, and I hate this language, but it is unfortunately the language that is used around this, but processing. Sounds a bit like widgets and things to me. I think this kind of doesn't really apply to human beings, but that seems to be the language that is used. We all want political parties and members of parliament to adopt policies that fulfil our UN commitments and treat people humanely. The policy states that we'd like to see an independent review into existing procedures and processes for those assessed, much nicer word, onshore. It's also important that people found to be refugees are offered permanent protection visas, because temporary protection visas prevent refugees from being able to fully establish their new lives, which of course we would all know. Offshore solutions breach our international obligations under the UN Refugee Convention, and the policy very firmly states that we need to end this inhumane policy. Furthermore, the policy categorically states that the turning back of boats should stop. It needlessly places both asylum seekers and seafarers in danger. It's not good enough to offload refugees onto other countries, such as Cambodia, which has an appalling human rights record and poor public health care services, and we all know the problems with that policy. But our policy actually states that. With regards to detention, the policy states that we have human rights duty to protect refugees, and indefinite, prolonged, mandatory detention worsens the anguish and suffering of asylum seekers who have already endured traumatic experiences. It states that the union movement is extremely concerned about serious allegations of sexual and physical assault against women and children, which have not been taken seriously by the Abbott government. And of course also to men. It states undeniably that we want to see the end of outsourcing detention to private, for-profit businesses. This is a failed, unethical approach with numerous investigations finding inadequate services and improper training and treatment of staff. And we have to remember that our new arrivals need to have a decent standard of living, and our policy does state that asylum seekers should have the right to work so that they can support their families and fully participate in our community. That is a very brief overview of what is a very long and detailed policy, but I thought I'd take you through the crux of it. And we recognise, of course, there were many speeches made after the policy and there were resolutions moved, that we have to shift our membership. For us to have a policy, everybody knows that the world is not saved by a very well-worded resolution or policy. And we recognise that. But hell's bells, it's a damn good place to start. It really is. And for a start, it gives me the mandate, to go out there and say these things in public forums like this. And it is very, very empowering for me to be able to do that. We have to go to our membership now. You know, the Ukrainian membership is a microcosm of society. We have lots of people who are union members for all sorts of reasons, as you would know, with varying degrees of opinions on things like this. And I can't guarantee, as ACT president, that the entire union movement is behind this policy, because that would be silly. We have 2 million members, but what I can say is that I have this policy and that we, the leaders of the union movement, will do our very best to take it to our members and to talk to our members about it and why we came to this decision at Congress. And I think that that is also a very important part of the next steps for us. I think it's important for our membership in doing that that they meet refugees. Do you know, at the Nurses Union, it took us a long time to get a very progressive policy up about asylum seekers. And you might think, what? And this is a long time ago when I was back at the Nurses. But the one thing that absolutely shifted them was a gentleman called Phil Glendinning. Does anyone know Phil?
Yeah.
And he came to one of our congresses with about half a dozen asylum seekers who told their story. Magnificent, wonderful policy. Excellence. It was very, very powerful. And as it goes to the Labour Party, I'm a bit up to date. You know, we have this Congress policy now, which is a very powerful thing for us to take, of course, to the ALP conference. It is a very powerful thing for our affiliated unions to have behind them and under their belt. But I think they're very, you know, it all boils down to a couple of marginal seats in the western suburbs of Sydney. And we have to, I don't mean we have to stop talking about refugee policy, but we have to try to give something else. That is, you know, we have to make the Labour Party believe that this is not a vote shifter, you know? And I don't mean to say we stop talking about this or we stop fighting for rights for refugees, but we have to show that we can win an election with a progressive policy, because we have lots of other fantastic progressive policies out there as well. And I think that that is a conversation that I would like to have and understand a little more about. But I'm going to hand over to Damien now. Is that right?
Thank you, Jed, for that great speech. And I'd like to congratulate the ACTU and the leadership that Jed has shown in getting a very strong human rights framework to underline the ACTU policy on asylum seekers and refugees. So it augurs well, and we hope that we can get the full, did you say 2 million members behind it eventually. Now for the second speaker, Aaron Milvaganam. Now, Aaron is a strong activist and an organizer for the Financial Services Union. He came to Australia from Sri Lanka back in 1997 as a 13-year-old unaccompanied minor. He will present us with some of his views on this very issue close to his heart. Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you for that introduction, Ilias. I also would like to start by acknowledging the traditional owners of this land, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. I also would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri elders past and present. As when I was invited to this forum, I was asked to share my experience as a refugee and the work that I do with the Tamil Refugee Council. I work with many Tamil asylum seekers in the community and are in detention centres onshore and offshore. So later in the talk, I will share some of the stories of Tamil asylum seekers I have come to know in the recent times, the people whose lives we're destroying every single day. Like Ilias mentioned, I came to this country as a refugee back in 1997. Australia provided me with a lot of opportunities to rebuild my life and contribute to this community. But I had a lot of difficulties before I came to this country. And I'll share some of the stories. I'm from a coastal village in northern Sri Lanka called Nagarkovil. It's a village of over 1,000 families. And the day that shaped me is September 22nd, 1995. I was studying in Nagarkovil High School, and one day, Sri Lankan Air Force came and dropped 7 bombs over our school. When they dropped the first bomb, it wasn't on the school, it was nearby. There were about 750 students in plain white uniform. We all started running outside. That's when they dropped about 6 bombs, killing over 30 children. Up to about 70, we don't know the exact number, but we know that at least more than 30 children were killed on that day. As an 11-year-old boy, I had to witness my own brother being chopped in half by the Sri Lankan Air Force. And the same day, I had to witness three of my cousins. One was a 6-year-old. We picked her up in pieces. They all died on that day. One of my friends, I had to witness him hanging on a tamarind tree by his intestines. Straight after the school bombing, my 15-year-old brother, I had 3 brothers, one died, 2 survived. My 15-year-old brother fled Sri Lanka, and he was jailed in Sierra Leone. His plan was to go to Europe, and he was jailed in African countries. And many people from my village fled as well. Some had died on the way to European countries. After the school bombing, myself and my mother and 2 other siblings, we internally displaced to an area called Wami. We were living there as refugees. And after 12 months of living there as refugees, my uncle decided to send myself and many of my cousins overseas to wherever we could. Many of my cousins in 1997 ended up in many of the European countries, but I had to change my plan to come to Australia because I heard the news that my 15-year-old brother managed to get out of the jail in Sierra Leone and had come to Australia. He was in Maribyrnong Detention Centre. I came here as a refugee as well, and I was in Wollongong Detention Centre for 3 months. We came, we were reunited in Melbourne. I lived in the community for over 3.5 years. I caused a lot of trouble in the community, I think. As a young kid with our parents, I would never turn up to school. I had my first girlfriend, you know, so many issues to my parents, to the community, and the school principal. And by mid-2000, I became really depressed, and I was admitted at Monash Medical Center for severe depression. That's when the local Labour Party MP, John Pantisopoulos, and his assistant, Dana Wilson, came and helped us out. It was with the support of the Dandenong Labour Party branch, I was able to find my parents and bring them to Australia. And through that, my life changed. That was late in 2000. And in 2001, I was shocked by how the government was treating the refugees. So I decided to do something about it. So I went to the Dandenong Labour Party branch and asked Dale Wilson, how do I become MP, because I want to solve this issue. So he asked me to join the Labour Party. I didn't know what I was signing on to, but I became a member of the Labour Party in 2002, and I maintained that membership for 7 years until the Labour Party turned its back on Tamils and refugees in 2009. Now, while I was signed from the Labour Party, I was still studying at Melbourne Monash University, Bachelor of Science and Arts. That's when I was working in a contact centre as well for National Australia Bank. I became a union delegate, through one thing that I should mention, that with my membership at the Labour Party, I learned about the union movement and the amazing work union movement has done in the last 150 years. The trade union movement in Australia has been part of various social movements. In fact, without the trade union movement in Australia, we wouldn't have had so many strong social movements. And that's why when I was working at the NAB contact centre, I decided to become a union delegate. From being a union delegate, I became a union organiser for the finance sector union rather than climbing up the corporate ladder. In 2009, I had to resign my Labour Party membership because of the way Labour Party executive, not the membership, but the executive, was supporting the Rajapaksa regime in Sri Lanka. Many of you would have heard about it. In 2009, the Rajapaksa regime murdered, according to the UN, over 70,000 Tamils. According to the Tamil Catholic priest, over 146,000 went unaccounted for, remain unaccounted for after that killings in 2009. Now, Tamil refugees started fleeing Sri Lanka not because of the Labour Party's policy in 2009 on towards refugees, rather because of the genocide. But the coalition in Australia was portraying it as weak Labour Party's policies, and the Labour Party couldn't explain to the Australian public that these refugees were fleeing because of the Sri Lankan government's genocidal agenda. They couldn't do that, because they feared the Sri Lankan government supporters in Australia. And so they chose to attack the Tamil refugees who were coming into Australia. They started by giving a negative security, this was ACO, but with the support of the Labor government, given negative security assessments to Tamils who were fleeing Sri Lanka. And then the Julia Gillard government introduced enhanced screening process specifically for Tamil asylum seekers, partly because of the relationship they had with the Rajapaksa regime. Under the enhanced screening process, they give you about 15-20 minutes to prove that you're a refugee. If you can't tell your story properly, you get deported back to Sri Lanka. Under that process, over 1,800 Tamils were sent back to Sri Lanka. In the meantime, Bob Carr, the man I most hated within the Labour Party, he was in Sri Lanka offering all sorts of support to the Rajapaksa regime, and in fact, he even threatened human rights groups from speaking out against the Sri Lankan government. Now, sadly, during these times, apart from the few unionists in Australia, and the vast majority of the trade union movement has been silent on this issue. We have been maintaining silence over the injustices carried out by the executive of the Labour Party. Under the... running out of time, they didn't realise that. Under the Liberals, we have been silently endorsing their policy of torturing refugees on Nauru and Manus Island. I want to finish by sharing two stories that I have come to know in the recent months. One is an asylum seeker who is receiving treatment in Australia at the moment. This person, a 14-year-old Tamil mother who had lost her husband in the war in Sri Lanka. She was sexually assaulted by Sri Lankan army for 3 years leading up to the end of the war. She fled with her 18-year-old son to Australia. She was not mentally well. She was taken to Nauru Detention Centre, where she was given sleeping tablets and raped by the security guards. This only happened 4 months ago on Nauru Detention Centre. This woman had been brought to Australia for treatment. When she went to meet a government-appointed psychiatrist, the psychiatrist had told her to forget whatever happened on Nauru and just focus on what happened in Sri Lanka. There is another Tamil refugee that I had come to know as well from Nauru. This is a 24-year-old Tamil mother with a three-year-old son. This was shown on 7:30 report recently. She will never be able to unite with her husband, who is living on bridging visa in Australia, because of the government's policies around offshore detention. This policy need to be challenged. This policy need to be brought to an end, and it can only be done with the support of the labour movement. It can only be done with all the trade unionists coming together against this government. Thank you for asking me to say this.